Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Peter, for organizing this and giving us the opportunity to talk across disciplines. I'm an ag economist, and my research is mostly in social sciences, but actually have the pleasure of always collaborating with colleagues across disciplines. I'm going to be talking about the impacts of climate change and thinking of adaptation, focusing on rural communities in the developing world, and probably mostly focusing on communities in the Andean region, where we've been conducting research on adapting to change, looking at not only climate, but also other global change factors like markets. And I think the talk last night reminded us that price matter, for example. A lot of the studies in the last couple years are pointing to the fact that food insecurity will increase in the tropical regions. And having listened to the previous two talks, that is obviously the case, and it's a daunting challenge, but it's also an opportunity, I think. Most of the approaches to date that are being published talk about the fact that the populations in the tropical regions are going to be very vulnerable, very insecure, and that's the case. But in the approaches to help them, to think about food transfers in order to help them move to other regions, to migrate, and not necessarily in thinking of how they can actually be the actors or the agents of change in their own rural communities. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, acknowledging that the impacts and issues are not necessarily the same across all landscapes. So the talk is a little bit about negotiating change locally, and the premise is that linking knowledge systems through participatory research is a process to build human, social, and political capitals to negotiate change. We're talking about the knowledge that we all generate in the sciences. How does that knowledge become knowledge for decision making? And tomorrow there will be a lot of examples in the afternoon, but I wanted to talk a little bit about our lessons learned from the work in the Andes. This is the Iyampu. It's a beautiful glacier near the sites where we're working. We're not working on glacier melting. We're actually working on agriculture and adaptation in rural communities around this landscape. I will be there first addressing the issue of what does climate change and changes in climate in general mean to rural communities and the Andean region in this case, but in general, to areas where markets don't work well, where policies are not necessarily targeting the most vulnerable in countries. So a situation that's not only compounded by climate, but other types of social, political, and economic vulnerabilities. So what are the social and economic impacts, and what is the unique to rural communities in these countries, and how we can develop adaptive capacity under these conditions of uncertainty and food insecurity. The first part is, what does climate change mean for rural communities in the tropics? And one of the reasons for having done a lot of the research on the Altiplano that Angie was leading in our team is to really understand what it means in terms of what we all talk about, global climate models, for a really small grid, 200 to 300 grid, which is a big spatial variability for the mountain region. But just to start linking what the scientific community is talking about climate change and is researching in terms of climate change, and how does that information then becomes relevant to scientists in Bolivia and Peru, for example, and how we develop a discussion around that. The other thing that we wanted to understand is what are the trends happening in these regions. So, what's happening with climate? Is it changing? And what is the scenario for the future? And how do we link that to the knowledge that farmers have in their own communities, which is a very local scale as compared to these regional? Here, what I'm showing is basically the research that Magali Garcia was leading in terms of understanding the climate trend changes to date in the last 50 years in the central, northern, and southern altiplano of Bolivia. And they're finding that there is warming going on, is statistically significant, and that the minimum temperature is rising, especially in the northern and central altiplano. So that warming is creating conditions that are favorable for agriculture in some cases. Angie just presented about the research. This is specifically for the altiplano and for that northern altiplano grid. The fact that we're looking at warming trends, we're looking at changes in the climate regime, that in increased uncertainty, that means for us as economists or social scientists that it's more decision-making under uncertainty in a risky environment already. So how do we think through that in order to create adaptive capacity? And finally, the fact that soil moisture is going to decrease according to projections, but that actually today observations by farmers are that the moisture in the soil that used to last for 3 days lasts 1 day today. And that's because of the process of evapotranspiration. So in general, the warming is meaning in the northern altiplano, for example, increases in new crops, being able to plant onions where there were never onions before, and new varieties of potatoes that are more attractive to markets. The projections are pointing to soil humidity losses and also the extremes to greater uncertainty about the climate from year to year and the interseasonal variability. So what are the social and economic impacts and what are unique characteristics of these altiplano landscapes? In a 200, in that grid, what we're looking at is a huge variability in landscape. We go from the higher elevations of Peru, for example, where you have camelid production, grasslands, peat bogs, to down to the Titicaca region where you can do crops and have animals and animals feeding out of the lake forages, and all the way up to the other side. This is the northern altiplano region where the climate projections are showing. There is also a lot of variability here. And then in the central altiplano, in the lower elevations of the central altiplano of Bolivia, we chose this transect of 11 communities because we're looking at altitude, we're looking at distance, we're looking at geographical variability, but we're also looking at markets, we're looking at government policy settings, and we're also finally looking at other drivers of change such as population growth. Some characteristics of the of these households. This is basically showing the bars of the 11 rural communities across the landscape of the altiplano, and this I'm showing because the points that we want to bring here, and I know they're the same in Africa, in African communities, and they're the same in Asian communities. The income from agriculture is important and is diverse. There are other sources of income. Normally, it's off-farm migration because in many cases, every time there is a drought, there is the need to be pushed out to look for other sources of income and reduce the vulnerability that households are facing. There is a high dependence on family labor, and the effect of migration means less family available for agriculture and less family labor available for intensive practices like organic amendments on the soil, for example. And finally, population changes are in many cases driving the length of fallow in the fields. And what we find in this area of the altiplano is that in the northern altiplano, there has been a huge population increase, land fragmentation process, and a decrease in the period of time and amount of land that can go into fallow. Unlike the central altiplano, where there is much more ability to fallow fields. So just in 90 kilometers, you have completely different drivers of change and completely different relationships of humans to land because of those drivers. Other things that are affecting these areas in the Central Altiplano, very good policies, concerted policies to promote the development of dairy, alfalfa production, and a very stable source of income in this region. Unlike the Northern Altiplano, where basically the main source of income in dealing with land fragmentation is temporary migration to other regions. And probably this is the case I know it's the case in Africa. I'm not sure if it's the case in Central Asia or Southern Asia or Southeast Asia, but women staying behind and being the leaders in production or the sole decision makers in the household. So those are some of the context characteristics that we find. We also find, for example, that I don't know how many of you are familiar with the livelihoods framework that's been used a lot in the past 10 years in understanding what are the strengths, assets, or capitals that rural families and communities have to develop their own livelihoods. If basically what we do is we look at those capitals and see in which ways people are building those capitals or depleting those capitals, and which ones of those capitals are in tandem with a sustainable livelihood or contribute to a sustainable livelihood. For example, there are two things that we look at, and one of them is related to diversity of crops, diversity of income, and in the case of the Andes, diversity of potatoes. So if you look at the diversity index here, just very briefly, you see a big variation where there are differences in the Northern Altiplano where families with small plots of land have to diversify across crops. In those areas where there is a lot of possibility for land and resources, families maintain the diversity of potatoes. And that diversity of potatoes is really important or has been important in managing climate variability. Not change, although the last slide that Angie was presenting is that richness of the biodiversity is something that we need to keep valuing. The reality is that in this environment, this beautiful biodiversity has no value because the decision makers have no bargaining power in the market. Okay, so as the talk yesterday was saying, the prices matter. Yes, they matter, but currently, we have the opportunity of the political climate that says adaptation is important. And so, therefore, we have to inform policymakers, not only, especially, I don't know if in every part this is happening, but many countries have national programs of climate change, and they have adaptation programs. Informing adaptation programs about the processes that can contribute to adaptation in rural communities is key, and the scientific community can do that. That's my plug for what we all do here and why we need to constantly communicate with policymakers at different levels. The other thing that's important is to note here is that more land, more ability to fallow. Less land available, obviously, less actors and follow. So in these areas of the Northern Altiplano, you have a lot of stresses that are manifested in the way people perceive risks. This is what we also are trying to understand is how farmers and decision makers are perceiving the different risks that affect them and what type of control they feel over some of the hazards that are affecting them. In the Altiplano, hail, floods, drought, frost, changing climate are all events that are happening in many cases simultaneously. So we asked about how much control they felt over those types of hazards. The other thing that we asked about was, because we are in agriculture, is what is the effect or control that they feel over the impact of pests? And what is their concern with the soil fertility loss? And in most of the cases, if you look at orange is a moderate threat. When it's getting to 4, it becomes a very strong threat. And obviously, when it's 5, it's extreme threat. One of the things that we find is in areas where there is high vulnerability because of low levels of assets and off-farm migration, most of these threats are perceived, and they're all high. They're ranking high, meaning there is a lot of risk perception, a lot of uncertainty in that environment. And that's one of the things that the models are highlighting, too, is that our scenario for the future is going to be of high uncertainty and risk for agriculture. These are just some examples of the impacts that these different events are happening. For example, of the 330 households that we work with, crop losses to pests are the first greatest impact. The number of people impacted was a high percentage of the population, and the degrees of losses were between 28, 32, 22% in the northern altiplano, 12 and 11% in the central altiplano. So there is variability here also in the type of impacts that pests are having. The northern altiplano is the place where you have more of the warming happening, more of the new crops coming in, and the higher incidence of pests. Another big concern in these areas is the effect of frosts, that while frosts are going to decrease in the future, and the effect of decreasing frosts in the future, if it's during the winter time, is the inability to produce chuño, which is the main buffer for food security in the Andean region. And that's it's been culturally and traditionally for centuries, and that's one of the threats to food security. Now, in the short term, this last year, 40% of the chuño being produced was lost because of not enough frost. So I'm going to then go to the next part, which is how do we build adaptive capacity in the context of uncertainty and food security? And many of us work on this in different ways. When we do research on farm, we do participatory research with farmers. One of the things that is important in a context of uncertainty is that two-way communication between decision makers and researchers is key to a process of building new knowledge. If I am confronted with new knowledge and there is a crisis going on, I can either choose to use the new knowledge that's coming in, say the forecast from tsunami, saying that there will be a humongous drought next year, or I can use my local knowledge, right? My own indicators that tell me, oh, because this native shrub is flowering and it's flowering well, that then my production system will be good during the next year. So I can use my local knowledge or I can use no knowledge. The problem with my local knowledge is that as more context change, more of my indicators are going to change. And the behavior of those indicators and learning about the behavior of those indicators will take more time. So how do we bring in new knowledge? And we call it local knowledge rather than traditional knowledge, because we know that we all bring in new knowledge constantly. But we don't tend to use that new knowledge when there is high level of risk. So doing participatory processes and learning through participatory research based on local knowledge and starting from local knowledge and building on that is what we're testing in this project. And so the idea is research has shown that information has to be relevant, trusted in the language of the decision maker and in the context of the decision maker. That's the criteria in general for the information. The information can or will be used given those characteristics if the barriers, other barriers like lack of capital, lack of land, lack of manure to do the organic amendments are also addressed. So there are two elements. One is developing the knowledge, but the other element is also understanding the process that can facilitate the use of knowledge. And when we talk about process, we're talking about institutions, rules of the game, rules, how do we work together, how do we collaborate to really build the networks of information that allow that new knowledge to be shared with others, and that build that political capital for the local decision maker to be the agent of change. so that that local decision-maker has the networks to communicate, inform, and negotiate with other scales of governance. And in our case, what we've been testing is building the knowledge based on their local knowledge by developing processes that map the changes that they have perceived, that look at their local knowledge indicators and how they're changing and how they use it, to understand with them their vulnerability to pests, to diseases, to hazards, and map those with them, and then develop a link between their perceptions of change and what we are observing in terms, in this case, the research on climate trends, and also bring in what the government is doing in terms of educating the population about climate change. There are wonderful videos in Aymara, which is the local population's language, about climate change. So bringing those information products to the local communities to discuss and to develop their understanding of what they mean, along with what they think they have to contribute to the process. And finally, evaluating how that information is shared across communities. We have approaches like working with expert farmers in the field, with farmer field schools, with community groups that are doing research together. What we're doing is trying to understand which of those types of forms of collaboration and sharing of knowledge have the effect to change decision making. What we find, for example, in comparing two approaches to doing research and collaboration, one in the Northern Altiplano was based on collaboration with the whole community using the community's official organizations, and another that's based on interest groups, working with farmers that are interested in potatoes, and comparing both. And what we find is that if we're looking at developing knowledge for uncertainty that brings in the greater variety of people that have different types of resources, we find that in the process where we work through official organizations in this particular region, we have people of low income levels, low capital levels, and high capital levels working together, assisting one and the other in the process. So some lessons for us in thinking about developing adaptive capacities are, and that's the now, right? That's, if we have to do something, we should have started yesterday, but we at least have to start today, the now, according to our talk last night. So one is working at local scale and understanding what are the conditions at local scale, so going from the global to the regional to the local. Understanding that the vulnerabilities in developing country contexts where markets don't work, where there are no insurance mechanisms, require processes that can help in developing adaptive capacity under uncertainty. And finally, that it's also about the policies, as the first speaker mentioned, that food security or food insecurity is not just a problem of nature or a problem of production, it's a problem of policy and political will. And so it's also then linking the decision makers at local level at different levels of governance, because they are the agents of change. Thank you.
So we have time for some questions. Any questions? Speaker. Yes, sir.
These populations that you work with the climate has changed and thus the culture and the food production is changing. The people that are affected by this change, do they ask why? Why is the climate changing? Who caused this change, or is that not?
They are not asking who caused the change. They're saying, what can we do about it?
Other questions? Thank you. Thank you for that.
Peter?